we'll do that today. Oops. Sorry, a little delay there. We will raffle off a PALS manual today and during the next three webinars. I do apologize. We had offered that during the first PALS webinar, if you were with us 2 weeks ago. However, in the survey that you complete, we did not have a name and email field. We have added that. They are optional fields. If you still wish to remain anonymous, you can complete the survey without filling that in. But if you would like to be included in the raffle, please complete those two fields, and we will announce the winner in 2 weeks at our next PALS webinar. Okay, lastly, during today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have during the webinar. Catherine, I see your comment, and I would check these speakers. All right, I'm tweaking something, so hopefully I'm coming up better for you, and we'll hope Dr. McMaster is even better. We are very pleased to have back with us Dr. Kristen McMaster to present the second webinar in our Strand 10 series, Using Peer-Assisted Learning Strategies, PALS, as a Class-Wide Intervention in Grades 2 through 6. Today's topic is Partner Reading with Retail. Dr. McMaster is a professor of special education at the University of Minnesota. She received her PhD in special education from Vanderbilt University. Her research interests include assessment and intervention for children who struggle with reading and written expression. At this time, we welcome back Dr. McMaster, and we hope her sound is much better than mine. We'll monitor that throughout, but keep the comments coming if you do have issues. We did have an upgrade to the system last night, so we're going to keep our fingers crossed that all goes well today. So welcome, Dr. McMaster.
Thank you, Molly, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm hoping my sound is okay here, but please let me know if not. I can try to pick up the phone rather than being on speakerphone. But thank you very much for joining me and everyone for part two of our PALS in Reading webinar series. I will go ahead and get started. I wanted to start just with a bird's eye view of the entire series, just to make sure everyone knows what we've covered and what's to come. So just a little review. Last time on October 5th, I provided an overview of PALS and discussed some general implementation issues. Today, I'll review some of those along with some questions that folks posed in response to a survey that we sent out last week. And then after that, we'll talk about the first two PALS activities today, partner reading and retail. Then 2 weeks from now, on November 2nd, we'll talk about paragraph shrinking. And then on November 16th, we'll cover the last PALS activity, prediction relay. And then our final webinar session will be a booster session. The idea is that hopefully you'll be starting to get some of these activities up and running in your schools, and at that point you might have some questions or want to review all of the activities or talk about specific issues that are needing some problem solving, so we can do that in that session. All of the sessions that we'll do from here on out will include a very brief review of the previous session along with a question and answer period from the previous session. And I would highly recommend or encourage you to try the strategies that we talk about in each session and then come back with questions after you've had a chance to try those in classrooms. Here's our usual acknowledgments. And our objectives for today are that you will learn to teach your students about the PALS jobs, teams and points, moving and PALS rules. We'll spend most of our time talking about how to implement partner reading with correction procedures, as well as how to implement retail. So just to start with a little review from last time, some of the key things that we talked about for organizing and getting PALS started in your classroom included assigning pairs. And just to quickly go over that, because I know there were some questions about that. In order to make good, successful pairs for PALS, you should rank order your students from your top high-performing readers to your lowest-performing readers, and that rank ordering can be based on reading data that you've collected at the beginning of the school year, and any other information that you have about your students' reading skill level. Usually we use fluency data, and if you can supplement that with information about their comprehension skills, that would be very helpful. So once you have that rank ordering, you split the list in half and pair the students together such that the top students from the top half are paired with the top students from the bottom half. And you do that so on down the list so that you have stronger readers paired with weaker readers, but there's not such a large gap between readers that the difference is too big to find good reading materials or the students will get frustrated working together. So the rule of thumb is to have some difference between readers, but not too big of a difference. And there's a question about explaining what paragraph shrinking is. I'll talk about that a little bit today, but we'll go into more detail in the next session. So one question about assigning pairs is, what if you have a student that is reading considerably below grade level compared to peers and is the only student at this level in your class? And this is a really good question. Sometimes this happens that we have a student that's performing pretty differently from everyone else in the class. And I had a few suggestions which you could consider. One is to maybe pair the very lowest student, the one that's in this question, with the second lowest performing reader. So if we go back to the pairing scheme, the very lowest performing reader would be this one, the eighth low performer, or however many students you have in your class. You might consider pairing that child with the lowest performing student right above them. If that seems like a good enough, you know, that seventh low performing child is reading at a sufficient level that they might be able to help the more struggling student. That would be one suggestion. I think the problem with that is that the second lowest performing student would then not get the benefit of a stronger performing coach. So that would just be something for you to think about, whether that makes sense for your particular readers. It might actually end up being a really positive thing for the second lowest performing reader to have that role of the stronger reader in the pair. But again, kind of thinking about your specific student's needs will be important there. Another option that some teachers have tried who are working in schools where multiple grades are doing PALS is to have a low-performing reader actually go and help in a classroom one grade level down. So they actually become paired with a child in a lower grade level, and that might make it easier to match students together and find appropriate texts. Again, that would work if you're in a building where PALS is happening at more than one grade level. And then a third option is that if there's not a good peer solution for pairing the student, you could have the child work with an adult. Of course, that's if you have the luxury of having another adult in the classroom. But if you do have an EA, an educational assistant, or a parent, or volunteer tutors of some kind, this might be an appropriate situation to use one of those adults. So those are some ideas that I had. If others have other solutions, I'd be most interested in hearing them. And so it definitely can be something that you problem solve around. Another question about assigning pairs was, how do we do this in inner city schools where most students are performing 2 to 4 grades below average? In this classroom, there's a wide range of students' academic levels. And this is actually exactly what PALS was originally designed to address. PALS was designed to accommodate wide academic diversity in classrooms. And so I would say PALS is really designed for this very situation. The pairing scheme that we talked about should still work. You should still be able to rank order your students. What I would be especially sort of concerned about is the text that will be selected. And we'll talk in a few minutes again about how to select texts of appropriate difficulty levels. It's just that they might not be reading at the grade level of the class that they're in. So if you have kids who are in third grade and they're performing at a second grade level, then you might be using texts at that level instead of the normal third grade level text. So I hope that makes sense, but again, I think this pairing scheme should still work really well in very diverse classrooms. And then the next question about assigning pairs is, should the pair be heterogeneous, reading at the same level? So the first part of the answer is yes, the pair should be heterogeneous. There should be a stronger and a weaker reader, so there should be some difference between the students. Again, not a huge difference, but enough so that one can support the other. But they do not need to be reading at the same level. The discrepancy shouldn't be too large, but typically the weaker reader will be reading at their instructional level, and the stronger reader will be reading pretty much at their independent level, and I'll review that again in just a second. And then finally, a question about assigning pairs was, do PALS partners change as in flexible grouping? And generally, yes, they change every 4 weeks or so, just so at that point you might want to look at your students' data and see if they've changed in their rankings. That's a good time to make new pairs, and it's also good just to give students a chance to work with a variety of different peers in the classroom. But you can also make adjustments at other times if you need to. So if your pairs aren't working out for some reason, if kids aren't getting along, or if it turns out that they weren't well matched based on their skill level to begin with, you can certainly make changes as you see fit. The 4 week is just kind of a general rule to follow. So another piece that we covered last week was selecting texts. So as I just mentioned, the text should be at the weaker reader's level, so generally no more than 10 errors per 100 words would put it at their instructional level. Again, using leveled readers is a choice that many teachers have taken, just because it's that information they often have access to. And each pair within a classroom can be reading from different texts, although within a pair, students are reading the same text. So again, it's going to be in the instructional level of the weaker reader and probably the independent level of the stronger reader. So a question related to that is, should both students be able to read the text independently? But the answer to that is no. One, the weaker reader at their instructional level. Another question is, are the students given text choice? And the answer to that is yes, that's a great idea. You don't have to do it, but I think choice is a great way to motivate kids. If they can pick what they're going to read, they're more likely to want to engage in that text. And one approach to make choice an option in the classroom is to have baskets or shelves or some kind of way that students know that the books are organized. So they know which basket or which set of shelves they can select text from. So maybe all the L books are in one basket and all the M books in another. You can color code, that sort of thing. And so if they do happen to finish a book with their partner and it's time to choose a new book, they could just go and select from the appropriate place in the classroom. That way, they're reading from the appropriate level, but they're able to make a choice. And you, the teacher, are not always having to help them get new reading material. They can make that selection on their own. Another question about selecting texts is, do PALs meet together several times with the same text? And the answer to that is that it depends on the length of the text. So you might have students reading very brief texts, like leveled readers, that are short trade books. You might be assigning pages from a Basel reader, and they might very well finish reading that text in one PAL session. But oftentimes, students are reading longer texts, so they might be reading whole chapter books, and then it might take several sessions. It might take the whole 4 weeks that they're together with their partner. So it really just depends on the length of the text, but they can certainly be interacting with the same text across a number of sessions. And then last, scheduling PALs was one of the things we discussed last time. Again, you're going to want to implement PALs 2 and preferably 3 times per week for 35 to 45 minutes per session for at least 16 to 18 weeks. And I recommend implementing PALS at a regular time, same time each day, same days each week, just to make it part of the routine in your classroom. Now, somebody asked, is there a time period or expected needed minutes for reading and switching roles? And the answer to that is yes. In each activity, each student is going to read for 5 minutes, and I'll explain more about that today. And actually, on our next slide, I did add the times. So last time, I just briefly mentioned the four activities that students will do in pairs. They will start by doing partner reading for 10 minutes, and within that 10 minutes, each child will have a 5-minute turn to read. After that, they will do retell for 2 minutes, and that's just done by the second reader. We'll talk about that today. Following partner reading and retell, they do paragraph shrinking. And somebody had asked, Amber had asked about paragraph shrinking. That's an activity where kids are reading paragraphs and identifying the main idea. We'll talk about that more in a couple of weeks. But that is also implemented for 10 minutes, 5 minutes for the first reader and 5 minutes for the second reader. And then finally, prediction relay is 10 minutes, 5 minutes for the first reader, 5 minutes for the second reader. So altogether, that makes about 32 minutes. When you throw in transitions and things, I'd say 35 to 45 minutes to implement all of PALS. And all of those activities are implemented in every session once you've trained your students to do all four activities. So before I move on to the new material, I'll pause for a moment and see if anybody wants to hop in with any other questions about what we discussed last time. I don't see anyone typing, so I will move on, but do feel free to add questions as we go. Okay, so we're going to talk today about starting to train your students for PALS. Again, last time I strongly suggested that you obtain a PALS manual that will make all of the PALS procedures even more clear to you and will be of great assistance in training your students. The PALS manual includes scripted lessons for training your students. So each of these days that you see on this grid here correspond to actual lessons in the manual that are scripted to help you present the material to students. And I'll give you an example of that a little bit later today. So on day one, you're just going to introduce PALS to your students. So we're sort of easing them into the idea of doing PALS. They'll learn about the purpose. They'll learn about PALS jobs, working in pairs and teams, and possibly about moving. So I'll just go over each of those parts very briefly. So when they are introduced to PALS, students learn that peer-assisted learning strategies mean something. First of all, that a peer is someone your own age or approximately your own age. That assisted or assisting means helping someone out, and that during PALS, we help each other with reading. And they learn that learning strategies are using different ways to help them learn. So they talk about examples of different kinds of strategies that might help them learn, just to get the idea that this is what PALS means and this is what they'll be learning about over the next several weeks. They also learn about the important PALS jobs of coach and reader. So they learn that a coach helps his or her partner, like a tutor would or a teacher. They learn that the reader reads out loud and answers questions. And they learn that partners switch jobs and that everyone gets to be both a coach and a reader each day. I thought I'd just read a little bit of the script so you can hear what it sounds like. If you actually have a manual, you can follow along with me. I'm going to read just from page 7, just a little bit so you can hear what the teacher language sounds like here. One thing to note, though, is that you really don't need to read the scripts verbatim. You can read them ahead of time, become familiar with the content, and then deliver it in your own words. But the scripts are written with the intention that, you know, a teacher would be delivering them, so hopefully it's in teacher and student-friendly language. So here goes. Today, I will assign everyone a partner. You'll work with the same partner for about 4 weeks. I expect you to work well with your partner during PALS. In PALS, there are two important jobs, and you'll learn to do them both. One job is to be a coach. A coach is like a tutor or a teacher. When you're the coach, you're helping your partner. Who can tell me what you're doing when you're the coach? and the students could respond, helping my partner, and so on. The other job is to be a reader. When you're the reader, you read stories out loud and answer questions. Your coach will help you do this. Who can tell me what you're doing when you're the reader? And students would respond, reading stories out loud, answering questions. Then the teacher says, who helps you when you're the reader? And the students say, the coach. You and your partner will do both jobs every day. Sometimes you'll be the coach, sometimes you'll be the reader. You'll do one job while your partner does the other job. Then you and your partner will switch jobs. Let's get excited about PALS. Raise your hand if you can't wait to start reading. Raise your hand if you can't wait to start coaching. I'm glad to see everyone's hands raised because I know you will all be excellent coaches and readers. So that just gives you a little flavor of what the manual sounds like. Again, please feel free to use your own words. Don't feel you have to read those scripts verbatim to your class. In addition to learning about coaches and readers, students learn a little bit more about their jobs. The first readers are always the ones who read first. Second readers read second. They work together for 4 weeks, and they work together to earn points for their team. And the teacher would present this pairs and teams assignment chart so everyone can see who their partner is and which team they're on. And this can also be used every week to tally up the points that the kids are learning as they are earning as they do the PALS activity. I see the question, what is the rationale for changing partners every 4 weeks? So the rationale there is that over time, kids do change in their reading skill level. So it may be the case that some readers become better readers and could maybe become the first reader in a pair. So it's just a good way to kind of look at their data periodically and make decisions about whether they're paired appropriately. It also, one of the main reasons for doing this, frankly, is just to give kids a chance to work with a lot of different students in the classroom. Oftentimes, kids don't get to know each other well if they don't have opportunities to learn together. In some of the PALS research, they actually had kids with learning disabilities. They had kind of a social rating scale for students who had or hadn't participated in PALS. And kids with learning disabilities who were in PALS classrooms got more positive nominations from their peers. They were rated as being more well-liked, as somebody that peers would seek out as a friend in the classroom. So really, it's kind of a social skills building and self-esteem building kind of thing, as well as just making sure that kids are paired well with readers. And in my experience, kids just get really excited after 4 weeks to change partners. It's a nice way to kind of mix things up. Tricia also asks, is it explained to students the difference between the first reader and the second reader? And the only thing that's explained in that regard is that the first reader reads first and the second reader reads second. I think kids often figure out that the first reader is the stronger reader, but it's not typically an issue or a point of contention. I think because kids are typically engaged in activities that they can be successful with, because they're reading at a level that's well matched to the second reader, it doesn't tend to be a point of contention in the classroom. But I do think they sort of have an idea of what the difference is between the two of them. Okay, the final thing on day one, if you would like, you can teach the students about moving, and there's a little script in the lesson about this. So basically, one partner will stay in whatever their assigned spot is in the classroom, and the other partner will move. And they learn the rules that they take their PALS materials with them, and you might have their folders and pencils stored in a particular part of the classroom. So whoever's moving would just go and get those materials and move to their partner. Leave your chair when you move, which might sound obvious, but I guess when these rules were first written, there was a lot of scraping of chairs across the classroom, so just to make sure that's clear. And then move quickly and quietly, and then quietly move the chair or desk beside your partner. So those are very simple moving rules, but I think these kinds of rules really help things go quickly and smoothly in the classroom and kind of minimize the disruption that transitions can have. It also really helps to practice. In some of the classrooms that I've worked in, the teacher would actually set a timer and kids would move as quickly and quietly as they could, and then they'd try to beat their time the next time. So making a game out of it can make it motivating and also just helps develop good moving behavior so it doesn't become a major kind of production in the classroom. So that was day one. We'll move on now to days two and three, which are all about learning to do partner reading and having some time to practice that. And you'll notice in this schedule here that for each activity, there are 2 days devoted, one introducing the activity, one doing practice, and then as we move on, we just add the additional activities over time. So on day two, they first learn the very important PALS rules, which are talk only to your partner and only about PALS, keep your voice low, cooperate with your partner, and try your best. And these rules are good just to review with students every time you do PALS. These might be rules that you enforce and reinforce using the point system, which I'll talk more about in a few minutes. But if kids follow these rules, it just helps PALS run much more smoothly in the classroom. Students also learn about organizing their materials, so they'll learn that in PALS they'll have a book or some sort of reading material that they share with their partner, and that's a key point. There's not going to be 2 copies of the book or 2 copies of the reading passage, but they share that material. And the reason for that is if kids each had their own copy, they'd be less likely to follow along and kind of be on the same page, literally. So we really want this to be a shared activity. So the material should go between them. They should have a pencil or a pen for marking points. They have a PALS folder, so that little purple rectangle there is a PALS folder, and that will have some materials in it that we'll talk about today. That will include a question card, a correction card, a point sheet, and there also are little bookmarks that you can cut out for students just to keep their place in their text. So kids will learn about partner reading, whose purpose is fluency development. So partner reading is about reading aloud and learning to read quickly, correctly, and with expression. The way that partner reading is organized is that students are sitting in pairs, side by side with their desks pushed together or at a table, and they're sharing a copy of the book and the other materials. And the procedure is quite simple. So the first reader will read for 5 minutes, and we really encourage them to read quickly, carefully, and with expression. So the idea, again, is to read with good fluency. And the second reader acts as the coach. So the reason, and just to emphasize, we've mentioned before that the first reader is the stronger reader in the pair, and the reason for that is the stronger reader will provide a good fluent model for the weaker reader. So they always go first. The second reader is the coach. They will listen and help with mistakes and hard words using a specific procedure, which we'll talk about, and they will also mark 1 point for each sentence. Now, you might be wondering, how will they help with mistakes and hard words if they're the weaker reader? And that is a question that teachers often ask. Typically, the first reader will know most of the words because they're reading at their independent level. The types of mistakes that first readers often make are skipping over fairly easy words like is and the. And surprisingly, the second reader can usually catch those, and it kind of makes them feel good because they're catching those skipped words. But it's also good as the teacher or a support person in the classroom to be listening carefully and making sure that first readers aren't making lots of mistakes that are going uncorrected, because in that case, the reading might be too difficult for them as well. And after the first reader reads, they will switch roles and repeat. When the second reader reads, they'll go back and read the same text. They won't move on. They'll repeat what the first reader read. On day three, while they're learning about partner reading, they learn that their partner might make one of four different kinds of mistakes. The first kind is saying the wrong word or word ending. And in the training lessons, the PALS manual includes some practice stories that you can print out and everyone can be reading. You can put them on your overhead document camera or smart board if you have that. But everyone is reading the same text and practicing and learning about these different procedures. So one of the kinds of mistakes is saying the wrong word or word ending. And in the practice text, there's the sentence, "In Faye's house, everyone remembered things, everyone except Faye." Now, if a student were going to say the wrong word for remembered, they might say rainbow. Or if they said the wrong word ending, they might say remembers instead of remembered. So that would be one kind of mistake. The second kind of mistake is leaving out a word or word ending. So in the sentence, Faye's mother remembered where she put things, if the reader left out the word where and just said Faye's mother remembered she put things, then that would also be counted as a mistake and would be corrected by the coach. The third kind of mistake is adding a word or word ending. So in the sentence, one day Faye decided to take tumbling lessons with her best friend, if the reader added the word up and said, one day Faye decided to take up tumbling lessons with her best friend, that would also count as an error and would be corrected by the coach. And then finally, waiting for longer than 4 seconds is considered a kind of mistake. So if a child is reading and they get stuck on a word, they might just pause. They might be trying to sound it out or use context clues. So we ask the coach to wait 4 seconds, which gives the reader some time to try to figure out the word, but not so long that they just get frustrated. So longer than 4 seconds would be counted as a mistake to be corrected. So when any of those kinds of mistakes occur, there's a very specific partner reading correction procedure. And this procedure will actually be used throughout PALS, so anytime a word reading error is made, this correction procedure can be used. Now, this correction card is available at the website where you can get materials from this webinar. You're welcome to take that out now if you have access to it already, or get it later. But this correction card, I think, is a good idea to print on some colored piece of paper so that students can easily pull it out of their folders. And I strongly recommend to make sure that every pair has a copy of the correction procedure. This just makes it easier for them to remember what to do, and they can focus more on reading. And Molly just put the website for where you can find that correction card. It's actually part of a packet of materials, so you'll see the question card at the beginning, and if you go to, I think, the third page, you'll see the correction card. So when a reader makes one of these four kinds of mistakes, saying the wrong word, leaving out a word, adding a word, or waiting longer than 4 seconds, the coach will say, check it. That's the first thing they say. And I suggest that you have the coach point to the words that they mean, because oftentimes readers will be reading fairly quickly and they might not stop when they make a mistake. So the coach should point to the word and say, check it. And then the reader can do one of two things. So if you look on the left side of the correction card, the reader might just say, I need some help, because the reader doesn't know the word. So if the reader says, I need some help, the coach says that word is whatever, what word, and the reader says the word correctly. After the reader says the word, the coach says, good, read the sentence again, and the reader rereads that sentence. The reason why we have them reread the sentence is because that gives them the opportunity to read the word correctly in the context of the text, which hopefully will sort of solidify the correct pronunciation of the word and just gives them a little bit more practice reading correctly. So that's one option. Another thing that might happen when the coach says check it, when the reader makes an error, is that the reader just says the word correctly. So sometimes the reader made a mistake, but they self-correct because they can sound out the word or they realize they read it the wrong way. So if the reader says the word correctly, the coach says good, but they still say read the sentence again. So again, the reader has the opportunity to reread the sentence correctly and practice the correct pronunciation of the word. So that's the correction procedure. I'll say it one more time. Check it. The reader can say, I need some help. The coach says that word is whatever, what word. Reader says the word correctly. Coach says, good, read the sentence again. Or the coach says, check it. Reader says the word. Coach says, good, read the sentence again. And both times the reader rereads the sentence. So there's a few questions that sometimes come up with reading corrections. What happens if the reader gets stuck on a word? And that's where we have the 4-second rule. So the coach should always wait 4 seconds and then help out. And it's a good idea to model what an actual 4 seconds looks like. You can do for one Mississippi and so on, just to make sure the coach is really giving 4 solid seconds. What if the reader doesn't know what word the coach is talking about? Well, that's why we always have the coach point to the word that was missed. That helps clear up any confusion about which word. And sometimes neither partner knows the word. So if they're reading along and the reader doesn't know the word and the coach doesn't know how to say the word, the coach can actually raise his or her hand and wait for the teacher to come and help with the word. But while they're waiting, they can keep on reading just because it might take the teacher a moment or two to get over to them. So they can still read and then the teacher can come and help them with the word. I'm just going to pause for a second and see if anyone has any questions so far. I've been talking a lot. I don't see any questions. We're going to practice that correction procedure in just a moment, but before we do that, we'll talk a little bit about points. So here on the slide is an example of a point sheet that's also in the set of materials that were on the website. So the point sheet has 500 points on it, sorry, and students will be marking this point sheet as they go. So there's a very specific procedure, just to be consistent throughout PALS. It's all specific procedures. The coach will mark 1 point for each sentence read correctly during partner reading. They mark the point right after the reader reads the sentence. So as soon as a sentence is read, the coach marks the point. And we suggest just marking it with a quick slash right through the box with a number in it. Not an X, not colored in, not in fancy colors, just a quick little X. And the reason why we're so specific about that is that if there's just one way of doing things, then there's never any question about that. We just always do the points this way. It's more efficient, and students learn that one way, and it becomes sort of second nature. So I suggest with the points just following this specific approach. So now I'm going to attempt to model and practice with you a little bit. Typically in PALS trainings, we're face-to-face, and so you all would get a chance to be the coach and the reader, and you'd have a chance to practice together. So I was trying to think of how to do that on a webinar, and you're going to have to use your imaginations a little bit. I'm going to be both the first reader and the second reader, but I'm hoping that wherever you are, you will participate along, and I'll give you some opportunities to do the correction procedures as we go. So let's pretend that there's two of me. There's a first reader and a second reader, and we're going to be reading this text together. So I will be the first reader, and I'll be reading for 5 minutes. I won't read really for that long, but I'll be reading this story, which, by the way, is it's an Icelandic fairy tale. I did a PALS training in Iceland this summer, and they gave me a book that's a popular children's book, and it's about these giants, so I decided to have that be my practice story. So I'm the first reader. The teacher has told us that it's time to start PALS and instructed first readers to get ready and read. Second readers would be following along and marking points. So you can pretend to be the one marking points, but I'll actually do it for you at the bottom of the page here. So here I go. Once upon a time, the giantess Slumbra fell head over heels in love with an ugly giant who lived far, far away on the other side of the mountain. And you, my coach, would mark a point because I just read that sentence correctly. Now, all giants are lazy, but Slumbra's giant was lazy beyond compare. I get a point? He was so lazy that he couldn't even be bothered to visit her. Another point. Slumbra waited and waited for him. She even started to clean up her cave for the first time in 100 years, just in case he might show up. Everything that was lying around loose, she threw out of the cave. Soon, gravel, then stones, and finally boulders began to bounce and slide down the mountainside, pulling up flowers, grass, and moss all along the way. "It's a landslide," said the people in the villages below. So let's say my 5 minutes was up now. So as the first reader, I read that passage. My partner marked points for each sentence that I read correctly. And now it's time for us to change jobs. So what are we going to read now? Are we going to continue reading, or will we read the same text? Feel free to type your answer. Will we read more or read the same text? So people are typing. Yep. All right. You got it. Okay. All right. So now it is the second reader's turn to read the same text. So they'll start back up at the beginning. Now I'm going to be the second reader, and you all are going to be my coach. So when I make a mistake, you'll need to remember your correction procedure. So if you did find the cards, you can look at that. But remember, you're going to say, check it. And then if I need help, you'll tell me the word. You'll say that word is whatever. I'll say the word. You'll say, good, read the sentence again, and I'll read it again. And then if I read it correctly, I will earn a point. And I'll have little speech bubbles for you to follow along and give the corrections. I'll say them too, but just so you can kind of see how the whole thing works. All right, here I go. Once upon a time, the giantess, you would say, check it. I would say, I need help with that word. You would say, that word is giantess. What word? So I would say, giantess. And you would say, good, read that sentence again. I hope you're saying that along with me. So then I would read the sentence again. Once upon a time, the giantess Slumbra fell head over heels in love with an ugly giant who lived far, far away on the other side of the mountains. Now that I read that sentence correctly, you would mark a point. And I would continue. Now all giants are lazy, but Slumbra's giant was lazy beyond okay. After 4 seconds, you would say, check it. I need help with that word. So you would say, that word is compare. What word? And I would say, compare. And you would say, good, read that sentence again. So I would read the sentence again. Now, all giants are lazy, but Slumber's giant was lazy beyond compare. And I would get my point. And then I would continue reading. He was so lazy that he couldn't even be brothered to visit her. Oops, I said brother. So you say, check it. Oh, I meant bothered. So since I corrected myself, you would just say, good, read that sentence again. And I would say, he was so lazy that he couldn't even be bothered to visit her. And I would get my point. So I'll stop there for a moment and see if anybody has a question about the correction procedure. So Pat asks, is it a problem if the second reader doesn't get as far as the first reader? And the answer to that is no, not at all. They probably won't because they'll be reading probably a little bit more slowly and making more mistakes, and that's just fine. When they do the next activity, it'll kind of all come together, but they don't need to read as far along. Looks like we might be having some technical difficulties. And Tricia asks, does keeping track of points take away from the reading? That's a really good question and something that teachers are often concerned about, and rightly so. So one thing is we don't introduce points until the second day. So on the first day when they're learning about partner reading, we just talk about partner reading and practice it, and then we introduce the points. It does take some time for kids to get used to multitasking, so because the coach is going to have to follow along with the reader and also be following along on the point sheet and marking the points. And we don't want them to get too distracted by marking the points. So some really simple tricks that the teachers have done is to make sure the coach has the point sheet right in front of them, their pencil is poised right over each of the point boxes. And so as they're reading, they're just kind of marking without even really necessarily having to look too much at what they're doing. And we suggest that they keep their eyes on their partner's text, keep their head oriented that way, and maybe just quickly glance over to mark the point in the right space. The other piece that teachers like to emphasize is that because we're waiting till the end of a sentence, you're supposed to pause at the end of the sentence anyway, so to help kind of build that fluency skill, the students can kind of exaggerate their pause while their partner marks the point. And it does take a little bit of practice, but after they've done it for a while, kids do get pretty automatic at it. So I would just make sure, you know, to tolerate a little bit of difficulty at the beginning and know that kids will get better over time. Donna asks, do they only get a point if they reread after having difficulty or after every sentence read? And in partner reading, it's after every sentence read. So we don't want them sort of making mistakes on purpose so they get points. They just get a point for every single sentence read correctly, and if they do need to be corrected, they get their point after they've gone through the correction procedure. What about those students who read through the period? Well, this is a good opportunity to say, hey, you should stop at that period because then you'll get the point. So it's a skill that we want to reinforce and make sure kids are pausing there. Again, that's something that you can talk with the whole class about as you're training and then be keeping an eye on as you're monitoring students during PALS and making sure they are stopping at the period and reminding them that if you stop, that's your opportunity to get your point. Great questions. So, are we ready for a little quiz? I'll ask the question and just pause for a moment. If you'd like to type the response, you may, or just respond yourself just to test your knowledge, and then I'll give you the answer. So, who reads first and why? We've got people typing. See what you come up with. Yep, so the stronger reader to model good fluency, perfect. Okay, and the correction procedure is at least the first part. Might get a little, oh, yep, people got it, check it. So you'll say check it. And then the reader might say, I need help with that word, in which case the coach will say, that word is whatever, what word. The reader says the word, and then they read that line again. Or the reader can self-correct, and then the coach says, good, read that line again, and they move on. What happens if the reader gets stuck on a word? How long do we wait? 4 seconds. Awesome. What do the partners do if neither of them knows the word? Yep, they raise their hand. They can ask the teacher for help. Perfect. And they can keep reading until the teacher comes by. And then our last question, what does the second reader read? You all already answered this one, so you got it the first time. It's the same text. Good job. So you all passed the first quiz. All right. So moving on, today's 4 and 5, this is where we will introduce the retail activity, and we'll still do the practice of partner reading. We'll add retail, and then we'll practice both of them together. So the purpose of retail is to build an important comprehension skill of retelling events in sequence. So with retail, we're really trying to help readers remember the details of the story and to remember them in the order in which they happened. Kids are still side by side with their partner. They just finished the partner reading activity, so they've left off wherever the second reader stopped reading. The second reader will still have the book because they were reading. And in your little packet of materials is the question card. At the bottom of the first page is the prompts for the coach for the retail activity. Now, the retail activity will last about 2 minutes, but for some students, in some grade levels rather, you might want to adjust that time to be a little bit less. So depending on how much text kids are reading, they might be able to retell for 2 minutes, or they might do it a little bit more quickly than that if they haven't read a lot. So you can certainly adjust the time and make it just 1 minute if that seems more appropriate. But generally, it's going to last for 2 minutes. The second reader is going to do the entire retell, and the first reader is the one who will ask the questions. So they will ask what happened first, what happened next, and they will continue saying what happened next until the second reader has retold the entire portion that they just read. And the second reader can retell parts of the text that they themselves didn't read. If the first reader read it, they can retell as much text as was read so far. They can also look back at the text during retell, so they can have the reading material right there in front of them and use it to help them remember what happened. As the teacher, I would just make sure that kids aren't just going back and reading verbatim, that they're putting it in their own words, but it's okay that they refer to the text. And then after the 2 minutes are up, which you could be timing with a timer, the first and second readers get to decide with each other whether they earned 10 points. So they can get up to 10 points for the retell, but the 10 points are really based on whether they judged their retell to be done well. And they don't have to have remembered everything. They could have made mistakes and so forth, but if they did a nice job of working together and trying to recall what happened in the text, they can earn 10 points. And oftentimes, kids will be very honest. If they think they did sort of a so-so job, they'll say, well, we think that was a 5-point retell that time. So there's a question from Catherine. If the second reader missed an important event, what does the first reader say? And basically, they can just tell what happened next, and the reader can then continue on with the next thing. So there's not a specific correction procedure, but the first reader does have the right, I guess. They can take on the role of filling in that important information. And they're taught to do that during training. So let's say that the second reader, had just completed reading my part of the story about the giantess. You, my coach, would first say, what did you learn first? And I might say, well, there was a giantess named Flumbra, and she fell head over heels in love with another giant. And my coach would say, what did you learn next? The giant was lazy and he wouldn't visit her. And the coach would say, what did you learn next? And I might say there was a landslide, in which case my coach could fill in the missing information and say, well, actually, first she was waiting for him and started to clean her cave. And then what happened? Oh, so then she started throwing everything out of her cave. What did you learn next? The people down at the bottom of the mountain thought that there was a landslide. So we would continue on like that for 2 minutes. And at the end of the 2 minutes, when the timer rings, the teacher would prompt us to decide whether we met our 10 points or not. And if we thought that we had done a good job, we would go ahead and mark those 10 points. I'll wait and see if anybody has any questions about retail. Here's your quiz. Who does the retailing? All right. Yep. The second reader, you got it. What does the coach ask? What happens first? What comes next? And so on. What does the coach do if the reader is stuck? They can fill in the events exactly. And how are the points awarded? Correct. They can decide as a team at the end. It's their discretion. They get to decide, and they can mark up to 10 points, or they could decide they only get 2 points, 5 points, 8 points. All right. Okay, so just to review so far what we have learned in terms of PALS activities, here's the question card, the first page of it in its entirety. And for partner reading, the first reader is going to read, the second reader is the coach, for 5 minutes. After that, the second reader reads, the first reader is the coach, for 5 minutes. And they are earning at that point 1 point for each sentence read correctly. After those 10 minutes, they move on to retell. The second reader is going to retell for 2 minutes, while the first reader asks what happened first, what happened next, and so on. And at the end, they can earn up to 10 points, their decision. So all of this is done together in one sitting once they've learned to do both activities. And they should have this question card right in front of them so they remember to do each activity. The teacher would be leading the activity, so setting a timer for 5 minutes for each turn and telling students when to switch and when to move on. Sometimes people wonder if once the 5 minutes are up, if we should let kids finish the sentence they're on or finish their retell at the end of the 2 minutes. But I would say as soon as the timer rings, just go ahead and transition on to the next turn or the next activity, and that just makes the transition go smoothly and quickly as you're going through PALS. Now, I just wanted to take a few minutes and talk about fidelity. Fidelity of implementation, first of all, might be a term that you've heard before. Basically, what it means is implementing PALS as it was designed to be implemented. So following the activities as they're laid out in the manual, really going through the training, I think, is important here. If you train your students well at the beginning, it's more likely that PALS will go on with fidelity, whereas if you kind of glance over the training or don't spend as much time on that piece, it might be difficult to keep kids doing the procedures as they were designed. Fidelity also means implementing PALS for the recommended amount of time. So generally, we strongly recommend 3 times a week for 35 to 40 minutes, and then doing it for about 16 to 18 weeks at a minimum. That's how much time it's taken in research to do PALS, so that's where we have some idea about how much time is needed for PALS to be effective. You can certainly do it for more than that, but that's kind of the minimum. And why is this important? Why should we bother doing all of the PALS activities as they were designed rather than choosing the pieces that seem like they make sense and kind of ignoring the other parts? And the answer to that is that if PALS has changed in substantial ways, we just won't know if, or we won't have any idea of whether it will have the same effect as it has had in research according to the validated procedures. So if you start changing the amount of time for turns or the kinds of procedures that kids should be following, we just don't know if it will be as effective. And it also makes it difficult to know if PALS is working. So if you or you are doing PALS, and after a couple of months, you look at your students' data and say, well, it looks like they're really not making any gains. The first question would be, well, did we do PALS with fidelity? If the answer to that is no, it might be that doing PALS with fidelity would lead to better gains. So it just helps us understand when kids aren't doing well, is it because PALS isn't working or is it because we didn't do PALS with fidelity? So to do PALS with fidelity, I recommend following the PALS scripts. Again, you don't need to do that word for word, but definitely cover the same content. If you have the manual, you'll notice that there are scripts, but there's also a sidebar that gives an outline of the key content to be covered. So you can certainly follow that outline if that works better for you. That might just be an easier way to follow the guidelines. Make sure you use the PALS materials, so the question card, the correction card, the point sheet, really having those prepared for students so that they become very familiar with the procedures and have those as a guide can really enhance fidelity. Also during training, feel free to take the time to make sure that students are getting it. So if at the end of a PALS lesson you kind of feel like, I'm not sure that they really quite understood how to do the retail activity, go ahead and do some more, spend some more time training students, doing some practice together as a class. It's better, I think, to take the time at the front end to make sure that students understand all the procedures, especially using the correction procedures, because those can be a little bit complicated. Make sure that they're really comfortable with those, and in the long run, things will go much smoother. You can also reteach as needed. So if you see that kids are kind of sliding in their coaching skills or sliding in their use of the correction procedure and so forth, you can certainly step back, do a whole class lesson, remind kids how to use those procedures and how important they are, and do that as much as you feel is necessary. And then finally, as I mentioned before, implement PALS 3 times per week. The other piece that we talked about a little bit last time is that the job of the teacher during PALS is very important. You become the monitor, and that's a really critical piece to making sure that PALS is successful in the classroom. So for partner reading and retail, there's a few things that you might want to be looking for while your students are working together. One thing is the coach following along? So are they actually looking at the text while their partner is reading instead of looking out the window or under their desk or at their partner next door? So they should be following along and marking points for each sentence. Some teachers that I've worked with before have made use of the PALS bookmark that I mentioned, or just any bookmark could be used. But the coach could actually use that as a guide. So while they're looking at where their partner is reading, they could have the bookmark kind of tracking along so that they're reading on the same line as their partner. You could also be looking for whether the coach is catching errors and using the correction procedure and following the exact correction procedure prompts. Make sure kids are doing that with fidelity. Do kids ask for help when neither one knows a word? So if you see that they're coming to words they don't know, are they just kind of glossing over that, or are they raising their hands? And also a really important part is to make sure the text is not too difficult for the weaker reader. So if you're walking around and you hear certain readers making lots and lots of mistakes and coaches are having to reread the sentence and correct them a lot, and they're not getting beyond, you know, the first sentence in the text, that's a really good red flag that the text is too difficult and you might want to find something that's more appropriate for the weaker reader. Amber has a question. Just to clarify, the student who says check it, do they say it after the student finishes the sentence or as soon as the mistake happens? And really they can say check it as soon as the mistake happens, which might be, there might be a little bit of a delay, so the reader might have continued reading, and by the time the coach says check it, they're a few words down the line. But as soon as they hear the mistake, they should point to the word and say check it. That way they're really immediately correcting the mistake, and just kind of addressing it right away. That's a good question. Like another question is coming. So I'll just wait here for a moment. Coming to the end here, but I definitely want to entertain the questions here. Oh, like it went away. But anyway, yep, so these are important things to be looking for while your students are working together. It is a great time, too, while you're monitoring, just to hear kids read. And what I usually like to do is spend maybe a couple of minutes per pair. So if the first readers are all reading for 5 minutes, I might kind of linger with a pair for about 2.5 minutes and then go to another pair for the next 2.5 minutes and then another one, and so on. And that gives you at least 4 different kids that you can listen to in that amount of time. You won't get around to everyone, but it does give you a chance to get some good quality information about individual readers, and over the course of a week you can get around to a lot of different readers. So Catherine asks, does saying check it immediately negate the student's ability to use meaning, reread, and self-correct? So that's why we do have the 4-second rule. So if a student is stuck, we definitely want to give them time to use meaning and self-correct and so forth. It's really more if the student has already made the mistake, they say the wrong word and they continue reading and they don't catch their own mistake, then check it is the immediate correction, so they're not just practicing reading the words incorrectly. It's also if the coach says check it, the student does have the opportunity to say, to self-correct and say, oh, I know what that word is, and correct themselves. So it was designed to hopefully give the reader the opportunity to self-correct themselves. And Amber, would this work in RTI or AIS? I'm not exactly sure what that question means. Are you thinking like in a certain intervention period? I'm not sure what AIS stands for. It would be good to do PALS. Some schools do PALS as part of a dedicated RTI intervention time. I guess where I would be a little bit cautious there, yep, I see, in small groups or academic intervention services. It can be done that way, and I know that it has been done. My caution would be we just don't have evidence and research for whether that's an effective approach or not. And when you're working in small intervention groups, the students are more likely to be homogeneous. So whether you'll have enough stronger readers and weaker readers to have this supportive peer tutoring relationship is a little bit more of a question. So yes, as Teresa said, this is more of a tier one intervention. Really designed more as a whole class. So with that said, people have used it in other kinds of situations, but I just can't say with much certainty that would be an effective approach because it just hasn't been studied that way. And it looks like there's a question about getting the PowerPoint slides, and Molly just provided that. So I will... you're welcome to continue asking questions. And in the meantime, I'll just mention the next steps. Again, if you haven't gotten a manual, I do have a link here for you to go and get the order form for that if you're interested in purchasing one. And then if you haven't already started PALS and you'd like to kind of stay in step with the webinar series, you might go ahead and conduct the training lessons for days 1 through 5. And also in the next couple of weeks before our next webinar, I'll send out a brief email survey to see If you have any questions about what we covered today or anything that you've started up in your classroom that you'd like me to address in the next session. I also recommend, usually in PALS trainings, I do provide some opportunity for people to practice together. And if you'd like to take the information that we talked about today and practice with a child or a friend or a spouse or your dog, just feel free to do that. I think sometimes just going through the activities and getting the feel for what it's like to be a student, doing the reading and correcting, can be really helpful. So I encourage you to do that, maybe with your colleagues or anybody who is willing to practice with you. And I will hang out for a bit more to see if there are questions. Otherwise, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to talking with you next time.
Just a reminder, folks, I will post in the link to the evaluation, and we will draw a name for the PALS manual raffle based on the surveys. But there are two fields at the end of the survey that are optional, name and email. We do need those filled in if you wish to be in the raffle. Otherwise, you can just do the survey if you want your feedback to be anonymous. I just wanted to clarify that for everybody or those who logged in late. I did mention that at the beginning, but we are raffling off PALS manual today as well as the next three PALS webinars with Dr. McMaster. And I would like to thank Dr. McMaster for another wonderful presentation. So helpful. Thank you all so much. Doesn't look like we have any questions, just a lot of thank yous. So Dr. McMaster, if you want to hang on for a minute.
Sure.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in 2 weeks, hopefully. Hmm.